Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
When I say it, it just sounds odd that there's been 20 years that we've enjoyed this show that has kept us awake through so many sleepless nights, meetings where I was all bleary-eyed and couldn't function. But here we are, and we have this opportunity to talk to so many great people. And our guest today is Sarah Winter. And Sarah Winter, you may know her as Kate Warner from the show 24. Also, there's so many other things we're going to talk about today. But you will also know her as the good Warner daughter. Okay. There was a clear distinction that was made in the show. There was the other one and the good Warner daughter.
I was
and
you the get good to one.
You were the good one. So welcome to 20 Years of 24.
Thank you so much for having me. So exciting. And I can't believe there's a 20, you know, in front of 24 now. You know, 20 years is just, that just doesn't, it's so hard to compute that it's been that long because it still feels so relevant. And, you know, fans are still so passionate about it, and yeah, people still come up to me and know my character and know the show so well, and sure, it's really, it's so remarkable.
Yeah, and you have the distinction of surviving. Mm-hmm. You there's a small group of people, and certainly romantically linked to Jack.
Yeah,
that actually, I think you're it. I think
it's true because a fan pointed that out to me. I think on Twitter or Instagram, and said, you know, you're the only love interest that didn't die.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
yes.
I was like, wow, maybe I can come back, you know.
You could. You absolutely could. You absolutely could.
No, you never know.
You need a t-shirt that says, I survived 24.
I survived 24.
Absolutely.
Yes,
so,
true.
And Justin's joining us. All right, what's on your plate right now?
Well, I have three sons, a 13-year-old and 10-year-old twins, and that's a big plate of boys.
Absolutely.
You know, the pandemic has been, you know, I've just been locked down like everyone else pretty much. Things are slowly picking up. I executive produced my first film. Before the pandemic got really bad. It's edited and we have distribution now. It's very exciting. It's called A Mouthful of Air. Thank you. It's
congratulations.
Thank you. Thanks. Yeah. I don't know if I'll keep producing or if this is a one-off thing, but I really enjoyed it and I'm very proud of the film. Amanda Seyfried is the lead and she does an incredible performance. Finn Wittrock is also in the film. Paul Giamatti, who, you know, we all love. Amy Irving. And
that's an incredible
story.
Cast.
Yeah. So I'm very proud to be a part of that and, you know, learn a little bit about the industry from the other side of acting has been interesting. You know, it's a long process.
Sure.
So I'm very excited about that. And, you know, Amanda is having such amazing a career moment with Mank. So that's really exciting for us as well.
And she has quite the history of interesting characters. You know, leading up to the
tour. She's for such a young, you know, woman, she's, you know, got such a rich sort of collection of roles that she's played. And I think people will be so touched and moved by her performance in this film. It's a heavy movie. It's very sad. It's very, it's a tough subject, but very excited to have been a part of it. So can't wait for you all to see that.
Absolutely. What motivated you to get into producing?
I went through an experience when my twins were born, where I had very severe postpartum depression, which I'm not sure if you know anything about that or any understanding of that, but it's a sort of depression that has, you know, a finite episode. You do recover. It's a chemical thing that happens, can happen after childbirth. And I had it quite severely after my twins were born. When my older son was born, everything was fine, but it was very difficult. And I recovered. I had great friends and medical help. And I ended up writing an essay about it a couple of years after the fact. And I shared it with some friends that kind of went through it with me. And one of these friends is a very successful producer in film. And she said, "This is a movie, Sarah. This is she said, "I had no idea this stuff happened. I thought I knew about postpartum, but this is so interesting." And she said, "I want to do something on this subject. I want to find a script. I want to, you know," and she said, "I want you to be a part of it." So that's kind of how it sort of came about. It's not, this movie is not my story. It's written by someone else, but it was sort of an inspiration.
There are elements. My wife suffered as postpartum depression as well.
Oh, I'm sorry.
After the birth of her son. And again, it took friends and support and you know, just encouragement and love and recovery. And again, identifying the imbalance.
Having people around you that are brave enough to address it and intervene. Because, you know, when you're suffering, you just don't think like, oh, this is postpartum depression. You think it's all these other things, you know, because you're not thinking clearly, you're exhausted. And, but it's very common. It's much more common than people
want to admit.
Might think. But there's help out there. And I think this movie will hopefully, you know, start a discussion among other people and maybe new mothers or maybe a neighbor of someone who might see a mom who's struggling or someone who's just not coping. With being a new mom that's the hope.
We have these discussions all the time about the power of film to kind of put you into a position where it's not your perspective, but you can understand it a little bit better because you were kind of sitting in the room with that character. It's a real powerful medium for sure.
It is. And, you know, film, you know, can be so educating and so eye-opening. I agree with you.
It's a
wonderful aspect of it.
So when we meet you on 24, we are in that position. We are on the ride with you. And we, jumping in, this is a show that has pulled the rug out from us more than once in the first season. However, we're on the ride with you and we're like, that guy's not good for her sister. There's something about that guy. And you were part of the first real bait and switch where it was like, guess what? You were wrong. You were all wrong.
It wasn't the guy. Like, if you're going to racially profile someone, it's like, oh, he might be a terrorist. It was the blonde, blue-eyed, sweet bride-to-be.
The not
been
so good.
Radicalized.
Yeah. The not so good Warner. The not so good Warner.
It was shocking. I remember reading it and when I first, you know, when it was first revealed, I was like, what?
Do you remember what point in the process you found out that was where it was going?
I felt like I'd been doing it for a while. I mean, it was months into it. Like there was no clue whatsoever. So I was shocked. And I remember calling Laura, who played Marie, my sister, and I was like, did you know this was coming? She knew. She had a feeling, I think, from what I remember. She either, I don't know, something twigged or she overheard something in the writer's room. You know, actors were always like casually walking by the writer's room to see if they could find something out. Because it was all very secretive. It was such a great twist and such a great layer to her character, to be able to play, to be able to play the duality of, you know, one person.
I got hooked on season one. So by season two, I was in it every week And I remember when that happened in real, like in real time when it aired and nobody had seen that coming. And then I think there was a 6 week break after that. That was early in the early days when I used to take those long, and it was like, okay, surprise. And then you're like, but Kate's out there and she's doing this and she's helping Jack. And she's doing, what?
Yeah. And you're it just, really I remember, ramped up. It ramped up a lot. Oh. I actually, season one had already been on and aired when I came on board for season two. So the network, I hadn't seen the show. I knew it was a huge hit. I knew the critics loved it. The fans were crazy for it. And the network actually gave me VHS tapes, 24 VHS tapes to catch up, to, you know, catch up on the show before I started. And I got to like binge, like I would like, you know, binging, you couldn't binge back then. It was just network TV. You had to wait a week. It was before Netflix and everything. It was 20 years ago. And I got to binge these VHS tapes over a weekend. And I was just like, one more. I was an addict. An absolute addict. And I was a little terrified too, because it was like, wow, this is such a good show. Like, I don't want to come on and ruin it. And I don't want to, you know, there was, I felt very lucky that it was already a hit, you know, and here I am just jumping on board. But there's also pressure to sort of maintain that, you know, the quality and the writing and the, you know, and I think they managed, you know, to just to write it for years, you know.
What's amazing too is that season two, the storyline they did in season two was a wedding, and it's funny how the initial concept of 24 by Joel and Bob was supposed to be a night before a wedding, so they kind of got their wedding story still within 24 in season two. They sort of threw it in there, but. When I got hooked on 24, it was in 2009. So by that time they were on season seven. So the DVDs were already out. So
I was lucky. Justin was lucky.
I didn't have to wait week to week like Brian did. So
you cheated.
Yes.
The agony.
Then season eight and season nine I watched in real time. So I had to wait week to week for season eight.
You had to suffer.
Yes. Yeah, that's right.
And season nine. So and for 24 Legacy, I had to wait week to week. So
yeah.
So three seasons I had to suffer like Ryan did for all the seasons.
I'm a veteran. But even more so, you're a veteran because you did it on VHS tapes.
I had to press eject and, you know, I don't even think I rewound. I wasn't kind. I did not rewind. I don't even think I had to give it back. But I was just like, I just remember sitting in my living room just like, oh, my God, this show is amazing. And I had never done television before. I was doing movies and I'd never been a series regular on a TV show. And 24 changed my career because I pretty much only wanted to do television after that. I love the pace of it. I love that, you know, there were so many incredible writers in television and actors, you know, and the stories were rich and there were plenty of roles for women that were so interesting and you know, unlike movies where you're waiting around a lot as an actor, it's a much faster pace. So I really enjoyed the energy of it. And
So many aspects of the show that were so different and revolutionary, and things that should not have been revolutionary, but they were revolutionary at the time, and how they, you know, the strong female characters and everything that was, you know, entailed. And you have a Marie that you don't expect, and then she turns on you, and it's a beautiful thing. One of the great things about doing this podcast is that it forces us to watch a lot of TV and movies.
Yes.
And I congratulate you for surviving 24, but there's another point that I want to congratulate you on. Your first scene in a film, you kicked Arnold Schwarzenegger in the face.
Yes, I did.
In the sixth day.
Yes, I did. In Canada. We shot that in Vancouver.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and that was, I mean, that was before 24, so that's more than 20 years ago now, I guess. I think I had done that a couple of years before 24 came along, that opportunity. And what an amazing experience that was, you know, doing a big action film, working with Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, going up against him. You know, right. I'd never even been like an athlete or, you know, a big workout person. And I had to train and I did all this kickboxing and got into like amazing shape. And it was another great experience, you know.
Yeah. I mean, there are not too many people in cinematic history that have kicked Arnold Schwarzenegger and gotten away with it. That's pretty amazing, I think.
Was really fun to work with too. Like
was
the
he?
Funnest, yeah. funniest, like he's a practical joker. He was just a joy to sort of come to work with, you know. He was just funny. He enjoys being Arnold, you know, and I had such a great time making that movie. It was just fantastic. Yeah.
And it was funny. And it had, like an Arnold movie, it had humorous elements to it.
You've got to have some humor in it. And it's so funny. Also, that movie's about cloning. And,
yes.
you know, that at that time, people were really concerned about, like, there was Dolly the...
The sheep.
Sheep, yeah. And, you know, people were scared about the religious aspects and the scientific, you know, ramifications of cloning. And it was interesting to be a part of that and then to do all the publicity. You know, when you do publicity for a Schwarzenegger movie, you are right. doing junket after junket after traveling all over the world. And, you know, it was really, it's amazing. It was a really fun time in my life, you know, doing these, you know, and I try and tell the boys now, I'm like, oh, Schwarzenegger, he was the biggest star in the world. He was like an Avenger. I mean, he was bigger than an Avenger. There was like Arnold, you know, Stallone and Will Smith were like the big action movie stars of that time.
And do your boys see that?
You know, they're not that interested in things I've been in. It's interesting. Now they're getting older. Their teachers, you know, sometimes a teacher might say, was your mom on 24? That's my favorite show. You know, and they're like, mom, so that sort of makes sense to them. They can like, oh, wow, my teacher watches you on something. But they're not really interested in watching me in stuff. You know, I think you know, just like they see enough of me at home. And also when my eldest was young, I thought it might be fun for him to see something I did on television. And he was like looking at it and he's like, I don't like it. And I said, why? And he said, you're not doing your mummy voice. And I realized I'm Australian. So I have this weird accent. I've been here for so long. It's not very strong Australian, but it's not American.
Right.
And when I work, for the most part, I have to do an American accent. And it just sounded weird to him. So, and the way he articulated that was, you're not doing your mummy voice.
You don't sound like you.
You don't sound like mummy. I don't like it. Turn it off.
Well, I mean, I like to plug. I got into podcasting because I listened to a lot of podcasts. And I listened to, I think you said it was your first podcast with Art Scoping.
And, oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah, that's a great interview. And you talked about the accent.
Yeah, dropping the accent, yeah.
You were coached to drop it when you first moved to the U.S.?
That's right. I had to because, you know, I came here in 1991 and there weren't a lot of Australian actors. I mean, now it's like, you know, everyone's Australian, you know, and so many big stars are, you know, Australian and no one thinks about it. And no one thinks, oh, will they buy Chris Hemsworth as an American or Nicole Kidman or Russell Crowe or, you know, Hugh Jackman. And yeah, they do. But back when I sort of first came, it was like, ooh, you know, got to work on that accent because people want to hire you. And so I took that quite seriously. And I think obviously if you're going to live in a country, you better sound like the natives. So I worked pretty hard on that. And but, you know, in Australia, we grew up with American television and films. So I would hear, you know, I grew up watching The Brady Bunch and, you know, Little House on the Prairie and Dallas. And you know, I learned the alphabet from Sesame Street.
Very nice. Very nice. TV is a teacher. TV can teach.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
A
friend of mine plays for Rick Springfield. And the only other person I've ever heard to tell the story about being told to tone down his accent was Rick. To the point where if you talk to Rick Springfield now, it would be hard to kind of find his accent anymore.
Yeah.
Most people don't know that he's from Australia.
He's Australian.
And my question is Rick Springfield, does he get the respect in Australia
I mean, I'm sorry. Jesse's Girl? Yes.
Okay.
Mad respect. Mad. That Jesse's Girl is my go-to karaoke song.
Yeah.
And the school district where my kids go to school did a fundraiser a few years ago, and I actually performed Jesse's Girl.
That's amazing.
And there is video. Yes.
That is amazing. He made you and Rick Springfield might have been the pioneers for Australian actors.
Well, I mean, he's a little older than I am, but
Yes. Yes, he is. He is. He is considerably older.
But who doesn't love Rick Springfield? Jesse's Girl. You know.
Exactly. Awesome. That's good to know that he gets the respect.
Oh, and the Bee Gees. A lot of people don't know the Bee Gees were.
And the Bee Gees. Absolutely.
AC/DC? I mean, I could go on and on.
Please do.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
What was your experience like working with Fox and the writers of 24? How was it like the collaboration with them? And
very much.
And how did you get involved with 24?
You know, I was pretty focused on film, and then this sort of opportunity came up where, you know, this role had come up on 24. And I remember my agent talking to me about it and said, you know, it could be a really interesting, you know, career move. And I watched the series. I tested with Kiefer. We had to do this, like, they call it a chemistry test, you know, so you meet, you read, you chat. And I guess we had enough chemistry that they, you know, hired me. And it was, you know, the writers pretty much, we were left out of that process. It wasn't, and I'm not a writer. I couldn't profess to, like, you know, add to anything, or they were very brilliant. And there's a real science to writing for television on a network with commercials. You've got to write, you know, it's very technical. And John Cassar was the main sort of director, and he was incredible, like such a wonderful director for actors. Howard Gordon was also writing. He went on to do Homeland. And I felt like I was in really good hands. You know, I just kind of showed up as an actor on 24. I didn't try and, you know, I mean, they would let us change, you know, if there was some dialogue that just made more sense, you know, if you changed a word here or there, they didn't mind so much. Mm-hmm. It was intense, you know, the schedule was intense. You know, Kiefer worked really hard. I made great friends on 24. You know, I'm still friends with so many of them. And, you know, when you work like that and those kinds of hours and you're in the trenches and dealing with this, you know, very dramatic subject matter, you kind of form a bond that's unbreakable. You know, if I run into any of them, you know, or see them out and about, it's, you know, you just, I have such warm feelings toward, you know, all the people I got to know. Like Alicia was so young, you know, playing Kim Bauer, and Xander Berkeley was fantastic. Sarah Clark and Laura Harris, you know, we played sisters, and I've seen her over the years. And now we talk about being moms, you know, it's like, it's so funny how, you know, you just make these friendships, you know, when you work on a show like that. And, you know, I feel proud. I'm very proud to have been a part of it. And, you know, people still watch it. People are rewatching it with their teenagers now. Like, I watched it when it was on, but now the pandemic, I think, has gotten people watching. I didn't know you were on that, Sarah. That's so cool. It's so good.
Well, and just in the last, I think, 3 months, Disney Plus added the whole Fox catalog everywhere else but the U.S. And being Canadian, there's very few benefits to being Canadian. But this is the first time I was like, oh my gosh, it's actually good to be. I love the U.S. There, right? I can see it from here. But being Canadian gets us 24 and X-Files and all those shows on Disney Plus, which is amazing. So
that's fantastic.
The more and more people are joining, even the Facebook group is growing by 100 people a day on a show that's 20 years old.
That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that just like, it's such a testament to the quality and the writing. And, you know, it was really groundbreaking. You know, it was groundbreaking. And, you know, at first I thought, God, is it a bit gimmicky? Like, the whole hour thing, you know, how can you sustain that? But they did.
Yes,
I mean, they managed to do it like a real hour, an hour in real time was an hour on the show. And, you know, it was, and I remember thinking, you know, Leslie Hope had been in the first season and she was not only a beloved character, you know, that the fans loved, but she was a beloved actress that people missed and loved on set. So I was kind of, you know, I'm like, oh, a love interest? Like, is this the next day? Like, it's too soon. Like, no. There's a passage of time in between, like, day one and day two.
Right.
It's not
right.
like the next day. there's been some, you know, some time passed.
Well, I mean, in your character, Kate got to be a civilian that went into the field, which is pretty unique, you know, even through the rest of the show.
Yeah, it was very unique. I think they were very clever in the way they wove the, you know, my sister's character and her becoming the terrorist and then this sort of chemistry they wanted to take it further, the love thing. And it was just like, it just seemed a little too much of a stretch, I think, to have all in one day, you know, saving the world, you know, people dying, getting kidnapped, getting tortured, you know, your daughter's off, you know, MIA. And then fall in love as well. You know? Oh my God, it was such a whirlwind. But yeah, the writers were very clever in the way that they kept me a relevant part of the storyline in ways that I could never have imagined. Like each time something bad happened and I got rescued or recovered, I'm like, that's got to be it, right? Like,
right.
You know.
Yeah.
You know.
No, I mean, we
what else could happen?
We just talked to Alicia. And she was telling us about the scene where she shot the Gary Matheson character. And she was saying, I had one kill, but she said, I could have had more. And I think you potentially could have been number two. Because in that scene, you approach her, and she's shell-shocked from having shot somebody. And you're trying to tell her, you don't know me, but I'm okay.
Yeah. You don't know me, but I've been on every episode with you.
I just met your dad today, but you should trust me now.
But we're tight, you know?
Yeah.
Trust each other.
Yeah. And she believed you. And she believed
you. It was a bit of a successful leap of faith. But, I mean, look at this face. Who wouldn't trust me?
Exactly. Which leads also to one of my favorite scenes in that season finale is when you face your sister. And that is some scary... That the whole conversation, because you're saying, who are you? The acting is so tense in that scene, and I just love watching it, because it is the two of you facing each other with a glass in between. And boy, that was, she's on a chain.
I remember that. It was heavy, because I kind of want to kill her, but I also want to hug her and love her, and, you know, it was... complex and complicated and all the things you dream to have as an actor, you know, to be able to play in a scene.
Absolutely. Exactly. We always talk about how 24 elevated a TV to a kind of a movie type cinematic approach. And that is a cinematic scene for sure.
I agree.
That confrontation.
It was shot so incredible. Like I've never done anything that had so many cameras, you know, around, you know, it was hard. I don't know how they lit us, you know.
Right.
It's hard to light for a scene where there are cameras everywhere. And sometimes I'd walk on set and I'd be in the middle of the scene and I'd be like, oh, there's another camera. I didn't even know that one was over there and up there and down there. And, you know, and oh gosh, I remember also they did this thing at the end of each episode where there'll be a scene, it'll shrink to a box, and then another scene, it'll shrink to a box. And I remember reading the script where it's like Kate Warner is, I don't know what, like huddling in a corner, crying, shaking. And then we shrink to a box. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to shrink to a box. It's my first shrink to a box. At the end, because that's like the exciting, like, oh my God, it's wrapping up. How's it going to end? You know, it's like, you know, climaxing to this like exciting end and cliff, you know, how's it going to finish? And we're going to wait another week. And yeah, my first shrink to a box was like, you know, you never forget your first shrink to a box.
which leads us to Zoom, where we're all talking in a box.
We're all in a box.
Split 24, screen here.
I don't know, you know.
I still have my chair back, you know, my director's chair, 24, Sarah Winter. You know, I've never really used it, but I can't part with it. You know, I've moved house so many times, but I can't give
absolutely
up my chair.
Not.
My chair back.
I was going to say, if you ever wanted to sell that chair or the VHS copies you have, there are people that would buy it.
Would probably buy them. I also have scripts. I have scripts printed on like dark red paper because, you know, you couldn't, that was so secretive, you know, someone would hand deliver them to you because not everyone had email. Like people weren't emailing things back then. And it was 20 years ago. They would have someone hand deliver it to your house and you'd have to sign for it. And it was like a weird colored paper that you couldn't copy, you know, or, you know, you were never allowed to leave it in your car or leave them anywhere. And sometimes they'd just give you pages at a time. It was shrouded in secrecy, but man, it was fun. You know, so many amazing memories and just the longevity that this show has, you know, all these years later, people still talk about it like it's recent, like it's current, like it's now. It holds up in a way that's just blows my mind.
Is there a fan interaction you've had, a 24 fan reaction you've had that stands out in your mind?
Yes. I was on a plane once and we sort of taxied out to the runway or whatever. And then we sat there forever and ever and no one said anything. And people were getting nervous and people were getting antsy. And this guy next to me was like, I bet if you call Jack Bauer, he might tell you what's going on. And I was like, oh my God.
That is cool.
And I had to laugh, you know, because it was such a, you know, 24. The airports are, I think people feel freer in an airport maybe. You're meeting people from all over the country. And, you know, when you live in Los Angeles or New York, people are a little more jaded with fame and TV and famous people and, you know, recognizability. But, you know, at an airport, people have come from all over and people are not bashful about coming up and going, hi, you know, I love you on your show. You know, I love 24. I actually had not a fan moment, but I was tortured in a scene where they ended up putting a lot of blood on me. I was cut or something. There was blood.
Yeah.
So some actors will go to the makeup trailer at the end of the day and have their makeup taken off.
Yeah.
And some like me, I just want to get home and wash my face. So I just, you know, took off my costume and put my clothes on, got in my car and I got into a fender bender. And the guy got out of his car and he walked around and he was like, because I had all this blood coming down my face. I was like, oh, don't worry. I'm just an actor. I've just come from work. I was on the 405 or the one. It was on the 101, actually, driving back from set. And that was pretty funny. I could have really scared him. And like, you better call your insurance company.
Ow.
Buddy, because, you know, look at my face.
You thought it was a fender bender. No, 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 no.
Oh, no. No, no.
Wow.
I'm injured. Wow. I'm bleeding.
Can we talk my other, one of my other, I mean, there's so many great roles that you've done that I enjoyed, but Keitha.
Yeah. Which is funny because I've worked with Keitha.
Right, yes.
And then I played Keitha.
You played Keitha on Flight of the Conchords.
Flight of the Conchords was a show I'd never even heard of. I had just had a baby and I got offered this role and they were like, you got to play this real Australian. I'm like, okay, I'm Australian. They're like, no, really like balls to the wall, like rough, like, you know, really play it up. And I'm like, okay, I gotcha. So I did that. And then I was telling my cousins in Australia that I was doing this show that's kind of popular in New Zealand. And I was like, Flight of the Conchords. And they're like, Flight of the Conchords? That's amazing. These guys go on tour, and you know, I didn't realize what a cult following that show had. And that was hilarious. I did a music video, you know,
right?
But Michel Gondry was the director.
Yes, I know. I didn't notice that till I watched it again yesterday, and I went, "Oh, I did not pick up on that."
But like, I just wish more people had seen it or see it, because I would love to do more comedy. I've done so much drama, and I love drama.
Yes.
And it's my favorite thing to watch, but comedy is a really fun thing for me to do. And I'd love to do more of that. So I feel like Keitha.
You did it so well. Keitha was such a, you know, unique character.
Brennett.
Yes. Yes. And the, what did he call it? Kevina. What's your name again? Kevina? Keitha. That was awesome. And I love that. Sorry, again, I'm geeking out, but the scene where they're trying to convince, your roommates are trying to convince Jermaine that you've moved away and you're standing there. I can see her right now. the comedy setup and the timing of that is so amazing. And
it's so amazing. I mean, and it's so ridiculous, right? Yeah, I mean, it's just so sort of like, what is going on? But it just worked. And those two guys were just so funny.
Yeah,
and so, and it also played up, you know, the rivalry in this weird way between New Zealanders and Australians. Like, Australians don't really care. You know, we're Australian. We come from a bigger country. But New Zealand, you know, New Zealanders are funny about Australians and, you know, the comparison. And, you know, it, maybe there's a bit of Canadian-American there, you know.
A little bit, yes, yes. Yes, and,
New Zealand and Australia are always roped in together as like a, it's like, oh, I can't wait to go to Australia and New Zealand. And, you know, if you look at a map, they look very close together, but they're quite far apart when you're there, you know, in reality, you know, it's like still a 6-hour flight to New Zealand from Australia. That was a fun show. Flight of the Conchords.
Anybody that hasn't seen Flight of the Conchords should find it somehow. However, find
the episode with Keitha.
With Keitha. It's season two. Season two. It's pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. So. And also other people from 24 wound up on, I remember Alan Dale was on it, and Mary Lynn showed up on Flight of the Conchords.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, that's so funny. It's a bit of a 24 reunion show.
Yeah, but that's pretty cool that you didn't even know about Flight of the Conchords and then wound up on the show, because I've seen them three times. They know how to shut down hecklers better than I've ever seen.
Really?
I see a lot of stand-up comedians, but they are able to do it tactfully and funny and quick, which is pretty amazing.
That's an art, isn't it?
Yeah. Because we did have somebody yell, "Where's Keitha?" during one of the shows that I saw.
Oh, my God. I could have gotten there.
There's a cult.
I would have shown up, too.
Absolutely. How did you get into acting? What kind of was the spark that got you to move? And move into the acting profession.
I always, as a kid, wanted to act. I just loved to pretend. You know, I loved pretending and fantasizing about being other people and experiencing different things. And that was really how it started. You know, just the idea of pretend. And then, you know, what I did a lot of school plays and school musicals and theater and local, you know, productions and anything I could be a part of. And then commercials. And then I recognized, wow, you can actually make money doing this? God, I'd do it for free. I don't feel like that now. But I don't know. I got to the point in my life where it's like, wow, I'm doing this for a living. And I'm not qualified or skilled or educated in any other field. So I might as well stick with it. You know, it's fun. I love it. I love the collaborative element of being an actor. I love entertaining people. I think art is important and it's so necessary. And I think, you know, we've seen that in the last year. You know, people are gravitating, you know, while we're in lockdown, to music and television and film. And it's been a big part of how we've coped and shared things, and people doing podcasts and people doing, you know, other things, pivoting to, you know, but as artists, it's been
the key word, pivoting. Yeah.
Pivoting. Pivot.
I love that. Love that word.
Is there any advice you have for anyone who wants to get into acting based on your experience as an actress?
Yeah. You know, I think you know, if you're really young and you're still in school, just sign up for every play and musical that you can, take some classes. And, you know, I think for me also, athletics were really big in Australia, and I wasn't an athlete, but I recognized that when you're in a play, you still have to have team spirit. You still have to, you're still a part of something. Yeah. You work together. You lift each other up, you save each other if someone goes, you know, forgets a line on stage. And, you know, I recognized that I was making friendships with people in the same way an athlete might, being part of a team, you know, with a sport.
Sure.
That's a really special part for me. Because I love actors. I love, you know, working with directors and, I don't know, I sort of love all aspects of that. So I would say definitely to someone young, you know, get involved in anything local. And I think that's the best advice I could probably, you know, don't just do beauty pageants. You know, it's not a good way to get into the business.
I tried that route. It didn't work at all. It did not
work
for me.
Well, yes. I mean,
the hair, I just couldn't get the hair exactly right.
The hair, the crown, the
exactly, the tiara, you know, it just wasn't the same. Is there anything that we didn't cover today?
I love that you asked me to be a part of this, and that you've enjoyed the show so much. And you know, it's just so amazing and wonderful to hear how much joy it's given people, you know, all over the world, to now, you know, people, it'll forever, 24 will forever be a big, big part of who I am, and, you know, great memories. And I was really excited to chat with you guys and connect over it.
Typical barrister.